Hello, everyone. You're listening to Human Potential at Work. I'm excited about the guest today. I've been a fan of his work for many years, and I've actually learned quite a bit from him. So Ted Rubin is joining us today, and Ted Rubin is considered a social media guru in my book, and he talks a lot about the return on employees, which I really like that topic. And he's written some blogs recently. One is called Four Ways to Create Trust, The Key to Commerce, which I thought was a powerful blog title. And he also wrote one called Return on Employees, Social Media Empowered by Your Employees. So, Ted, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to talk about these topics. I'm really interested in them. I do want to say one thing. I do like to stay away from that word guru, because I really don't consider myself, especially not a guru, but not a guru, not an expert. I'm just a guy with ideas who's willing to talk about them and use them for myself and for people that I work with. So I really try to get out there in the trenches, not just talk about things, but see how they actually work.
I agree. And that's one reason why I love your voice. It's very authentic. And I think it's a very, I think you have a very important voice right now in the marketplace. And so I really am honored to have you on the program today. I also like that you talk from a perspective of a dad, and I'll use your terminology, a divorced dad as well. I was reading your blog that you wrote on Independence Day, and I just found it very powerful.
Well, thank you very much. That's a very, very important topic to me, and a big part of who I am, and I've tried to share a lot about it. Number one is because it's something that's such a big part of me; it's hard not to. But number two, from just everything that I've learned from it, and I also believe that we live in a different time now. You know, there used to be this very distinct separation between personal and business. Not only was it just customary, but it was almost ordered as so. Like, keep your personal life at home, keep your business life separate. And I think those two things have really merged now. I think it has to do with an evolution of the workplace. I think it has to do with the changing times. I think it has to do with the platforms and the abilities we have now to connect and communicate. And the fact that so many people work in so many different places that I truly believe that people want to know who you are as a person. And that doesn't mean they're evaluating you. It means they're just understanding you a little better.
Well, and it's showing your humanness. And so I agree with you.
Absolutely. And I find, like I said, it's just a big part of it. I share a lot of my personal life. I share a lot about being a divorced dad, about fighting to keep my daughters in my life. I share a lot about being an uncle and all the things I do personally. And what I find is I make more of a connection with senior executives and really just everyone I deal with through what I share personally than what I share from a business perspective. So yes, I write a lot of things. I write about marketing. I write about social marketing. I write about relationships and customer experience and empowering your employees. But truth be told, I would say the vast majority of times when somebody says, oh my God, like, Ted, it's so great to meet you. Like, I loved your post about your socks, or I love that, you know, I love how important being a dad is to you. And I get this from the level, from a managerial level or even just an employee level all the way up to the C-suite. I mean, more CEOs make a comment to me about something I did on a weekend or something I wrote about my kids or something I wrote about any of those kind of topics than necessarily, oh, that was a great post you wrote about employee advocacy.
And it must be very good for you as well to really help you work through all of those, and, you know, just get through life, right? It must teach you a lot as well.
You know, absolutely. I talk a lot about being good to people and just being nice. And I've kind of been that way my whole life, maybe just not to the degree I am now. I was taught it as a child. My dad was that guy. He was the guy that made me sweep the neighbors' walks and shovel their snow when it snowed. And we'd be driving down the street where we knew nobody, and there'd be some garbage pails clearly with an address on them, rolled out in the middle of the street. And he'd stop the car and get out himself when I was younger and move them. And obviously, as I got older, it was pushing me out the door and telling me to pick up those things. And, you know, when I was young, you know, sometimes I understood it. Sometimes I say, Dad, why are we doing that? And they're not even going to know.
Right.
He goes, they don't have They don't have to know. First of all, you're doing it a lot for yourself. It's what he says, it makes me feel good. And the truth is, again, when I talk a lot about this, be good to people, and I wear the shirts when I travel, and it certainly has changed the way people interact and engage with me. More importantly, it's how it makes me feel when you do something good for somebody else. You know, you shouldn't be waiting for what they do in return. And I'm not saying, like, what I like to say is do for others without expectation or anything directly in return. That doesn't mean you don't want a return. That return can be the good feeling you get. That return can be that Deborah reaches out to you and says, I'd love to have you on my show because I've heard all these things about you. That return can be in so many different ways. I like to say that a brand is what a business or a person does. A reputation is what people remember and share. Okay. And to me, these things build your reputation. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten work, or I've gotten somebody reached out to me, or somebody's offered to do a favor, and I've never even met them. And they go, yeah, but we see everything you do for other people, so why wouldn't we help you too?
Right, right. I totally agree. Will you tell the audience a little bit about your work?
Okay. Well, I guess that really starts out with a little bit about me. So first of all, I'm 59, so you don't want to hear everything about me. The history is way too long. I did a lot of different things. I was in the investment business. I helped build a few small companies when I was younger. But the big change in my life that brought me into this space was that I had left, closed a business. I had moved to South Florida. I got married. I had some kids. I was very unhappy down there. I was looking for something new, and I discovered the internet in 1997. And I started researching, and amongst the many things I read an article that was an interview of Seth Godin. And this is before Seth was Seth. This was when Seth had just founded a company a couple of years before called Yoyodyne. He had been known, he kind of built a rep for himself as a product marketing manager working for Atari, you know, as a wunderkind, but in a very limited space before people shared those things socially. And this article was just very intriguing. He was clearly brilliant. They were asking a lot of questions about this new thing called the internet. He had started a company called Yoyodyne, which was the first online direct marketing company. And he was kind of getting into a lot of all these things that he's been preaching since about how to market to people and how to gain their permission and how to talk to them about the right thing at the right time. And I read the article. At the end of it, the interviewer asked him if he hadn't, says, wow, this is a cool company. Do you have any job openings? And he said, no. But I will always hire a smart person. That's the way I build my company. And I wrote him a letter. Yeah, a letter with an enclosed resume. And at the time, like I said, I was looking for to move back to New York. And I said, and he had also mentioned that he was selling something that no one had ever sold before. So he needed people that could sell something that they didn't have experience in. And I said, look, I can sell anything and I'm smart. My wife at the time, who was my ex, said to me, why would you like kind of chastise me for why would I try to get a job someplace when there are no job openings? And a week later, I get a call from Yoyodyne and I go up there and I end up going to work for Seth. I moved up there first without my family. So I had a wonderful opportunity because I had a lot of free time. I made the mistake of moving in with my in-laws for a few months, waiting for my family to move. Don't ever, ever move in with your in-laws, especially if they're like, especially if they're like the Costanzas and all they do is yell at each other. So I'm not an early riser, but I believe everything happens for a reason. And because of that, I left their house before anybody woke up every morning. And I got to the Yoyodyne offices like between 6 and 6:30 a.m. And the only other person there was Seth. Seth's an early riser. And Seth was coming up with all these ideas. And I was the guy sitting there that got to listen to all of them. And I was smart enough to shut my mouth and listen. And Seth coined the term permission marketing while I was sitting there. He wrote the article for Fast Company magazine, which became his first bestseller. So that was a real developmental thing for me. I was around Seth. I learned from Seth in the early days when he had more time. He was building a company. He was appreciating the people that worked for him, you know, in a special way because we were there trying to build this thing. And it's really where I first started kind of coming to this concept of return on relationship. I kind of known it inside, but listening to Seth talk and ideas, how ideas spread, his idea virus book and how to get people's permission and the way he would make us spend time with companies that we were trying to sell. I mean, as desperate as we were for sales, he was kind of annoyed sometimes if we came back from a first meeting with an order. He wanted us to know more about them. He wanted us to build a relationship. He wanted us to go beyond an agency relationship and get to know the people at the brands. And if we did bring back an order right away, he'd ask us a lot of questions about the company to make sure that we understood what they needed, what they wanted, what they were looking to accomplish. And if we didn't, he wasn't happy. So that was my early days in digital. Again, it was when e-commerce was a catalog online, when new media was just old media in a new package. And it allowed me to watch this evolution to what new media is today, the age of influence, where anybody can build a brand, affect change, and make a difference 24/7, without ever leaving their bedroom if they choose not to do so. I'm not advocating that, but I'm saying it's possible. It also allows us, you know, like Gary Vaynerchuk likes to say, if you don't like your job, if you don't like what you do, but you have to do it, you still got a lot of hours at night and you've got hours you could cut out of your sleep. And again, I'm not necessarily advocating that for every person, but the point is, it used to be you got home from work and you were done. Maybe you could call a few people, but now you can be making connections, building a business, doing something on the side anytime. So to me, that was just tremendous. And from Yo-Yo 9, I went through a lot of Web 1.0. And just to fast forward, I ended up at a company called Elf Cosmetics in 2008. They had about 5 million in sales. They had kind of hit a wall. They had no marketing budget. They were using traditional word of mouth. I jumped them into the social space. We had tremendous success with it. It was all about women and moms and women. Look, we know women control purchases. Women love to share. Social was breaking out. It was cosmetics. And admit this, you can, Deborah, we're here. You could admit to your audience that when you get a box of cosmetics in the mail, you become a little girl again. And you start I sent cosmetics to Beth Comstock. I mean, one of the most powerful women in the country. And I got back the same reply. Oh my God, Ted, this was so much fun. I was up all night trying different stuff. You know, and so I was in the early ages of social. I was at a company that had a fun product that was a family-owned business that was desperate to build awareness and sell product. So they let me do anything I wanted. And I got to experiment in the early days of social, doing things that nobody else was doing. And I became friends with guys like Jeffrey Hazlett, who at the time was a progressive CMO at Kodak, jumping into social, and Barry Judge, who was doing the same at Best Buy. And we would brainstorm. And then at the end, they go, oh, go, you try it, because I could try anything. So I was lucky, and I learned early on how important it is to experiment with these things, how easy it is to do, how you can go out and try anything. You shouldn't be locked in on a calendar year. And that's kind of what brought me to where I am today. I progressed from Elf to a company called OpenSky that was doing peer-to-peer commerce. So I got some great experience with that. I built their social following when they kind of pivoted and decided to sell celebrity recommended products, which they've subsequently left and gone back to peer-to-peer. I was the part of the deal was I got to take all the Twitter handles I built for them other than just their main one. And I had been building this whole idea of Twitter syndication, using multiple handles to get people to retweet and share content and basically build a marketing plan without a marketing budget. I brought that to Collective Bias, whose board I was on. I became a partner there. We were building content using user-generated content, bloggers creating content at scale in a storytelling format for brands, and had a great few years there. They were acquired last year, so that was great. And now I'm speaking and I MC events for a company called Brand Innovators. And I work with a number of different startups, helping facilitate introductions and build their brand awareness. And I've been fortunate enough to do some influencer work with major brands too. So it's kind of all good. And I hope that didn't go too long, but there you have it.
Well, no, because it's very interesting listening to the path unfold. And I have the thing I really like about following you on social media is the return on relationships, because I love the story you said about your dad, because that's always what I've tried to be as well, just to make a difference in the world, even if nobody's watching. And I, of course, am very, it's very important to me that the community of people with disabilities be fully included. And I've really been encouraging my community to get out on social media, form relationships, find your voice, engage with others. And I think one reason why I bring people on that I feel really have a very important voice is because I want to make sure that they know who the leaders are out there and who they can learn from as they, you know, find their own voices and they follow their purpose and passion. So tell us more about the return on relationship, because I just think, and you have a hashtag that's very popular with your return on relationship, but I just think it's such a very important part of your work.
Well, you know, I appreciate you saying, and I would just like to simplify it for people a little bit as far as putting like a description around it. So I like to say that return on relationship, which a lot of times ROR, the shorthand for that is used, and the hashtag I use, and that's a story unto itself, is RONR for return on relationship. But simply put, it's the value that's accrued by a person or a brand due to nurturing a relationship. ROI is simple dollars and cents. Easy to measure, easy to understand, but ROR is the value, I like to say both perceived and real, that will accrue over time through connection, loyalty, recommendations, and sharing. And it's being used to define and educate companies and brands and people about the importance of creating authentic connection, interaction, and engagement. So that's a simple explanation. If you want to really simplify it, I like to say that ROI is about dollars and cents and ROR is about people.
Okay.
It's about connecting. It's about engaging. It's about, like you said earlier, humanizing your brand. You know, again, it's a very different world. I feel that commerce and connection has really come full circle. There was a time when I was young, and that I'm talking growing up in the 60s, where everything was local. Right? I mean, you went to your local bakery, your local butcher, everybody knew each other, and obviously even more so before that, when towns were even smaller. But even I experienced that, and everybody knew your family. They recommended things to your mom. Even the supermarket guy would say, oh, Mrs. Rubin, you know, we have a new chocolate cake in. Your boys will love it. And they were careful about that because they did know your family, and they knew that Mrs. Rubin would be back Monday morning to say this cake sucked. Maybe not in those words, but, you know, oh my God, my boy didn't really like it. You know, maybe she wouldn't have been complaining us for our money back, but she certainly would have been sharing her displeasure and sharing it with her friends. And everything was personal, and we believed that whatever we shared, people knew. And then we came into this world of mass merchandising and huge department stores and huge supermarkets, and everyone thought they became anonymous. Except we never were really anonymous because right. They've been tracking us since the 50s. I mean, American Express has more data probably than almost any company out there. They've been tracking you since the 50s. Every purchase, everything you did, everybody got into these glorious credit cards and they were giving away all the information. They joined clubs in the stores to get discounts. But again, we all know now that they were tracking your moves, looking what you were doing, offering you different things. And women would go to a supermarket with their curlers on because they thought nobody would see them. It's this huge place. Who knows when they will be there. And what's happened now is that we've come into this world where we are being tracked more than ever, but we recognize it and we know it. And we're okay with it as long as we get value in return, just like the value we got back in the day when the baker or the candlestick maker knew who we were and gave us things that we cared about because they knew we'd be back if we didn't. And now we kind of have that voice again because you had it in your town. Nobody wanted to piss off somebody who was going to the PTA meetings and dropping off the kids at school and going to the Little League games because everybody knew each other. And now we're kind of back in that. Everybody knows each other. Any one of us can share our displeasure and let the world know about it. And the same way, anyone can share their pleasure. And by the way, I come from the camp. A lot of people say, people just complain on social media about brands. I don't believe that. If you really look, only because that's what people start sharing or hearing about, or that's what companies get upset about. So you read about it in the papers or in from journalists. But the truth be told, people are much more apt to say good things. Really right. Love my experience. They're really happy there. I mean, then it goes to holding people like to share good experiences as well. And, you know, sometimes people say people share too much good. You know, more and more to this social thing, it's what you make of it. If you only are friends or follow people that only write the good stuff in their lives, well, you're going to know that because you know some of those people. But if you follow people that are true friends and they're sharing a lot more, there are plenty of people out there that share their ups, their downs, their heartache. And like you said earlier, I think you made a comment about that I get to share these things and it helps me. And it's true because, you know, one thing I just left out of when I talked about my career is that wrapped around that whole thing was this thing about being a dad and how important it was to me and how much I love watching other dads and how much I love watching kids and how important my nieces are to me and that kind of a thing. So when you do these things and when you have a hard time or you had a bad day, there are people out there all the time. You're no longer stuck in your house by yourself calling your one friend who's already sleeping or isn't home or isn't available.
Right. And I'll tell you, social isolation is very common in the community of people with disabilities too. And certainly as we age, many people become very socially isolated. And so I agree with you. Social media is what you make it. And
I think for people with disabilities, it can be tremendous.
Yes.
There's so many opportunities to connect and link up with people that have the same challenges, or maybe different challenges, but have challenges. And also to recognize that, you know, there's so many more people with challenges than you realize.
Right.
And when somebody, you know, again, you say people only say good things, but when you open your soul, people tend to open themselves up back. And I've met some incredible people with disabilities via social media. And I it's opened my eyes, and I like that part. But what I really like is the fact that this is an equalizer. This
right.
takes people, allows them to know, and allows them to travel without traveling. It's an equalizer economically, to a certain degree. Obviously, we are in the percentage of people that have access to these tools, and still not everybody does, and that's unfortunate. But I think we're moving in that direction. But it's a great equalizer economically and physically and emotionally. I mean,
I agree.
You know,
I agree.
I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, but that was a very important point that you brought up, because we talk a lot about the human potential on this show. And of course, I just am very, it's very near and dear to my heart, the community of people with disabilities, and I'm part of that community. But it's really about humanizing, once again, humanizing. So I was listening to something, I think on Super Soul Sunday the other day, and one of the guests made a comment that as opposed to nationality, they want to focus on humanity. And I just loved that term so much, because it really, social media allows us to connect with other humans. And I've had guests on that talked about humanizing your brand and how important that is. And I thought it was an interesting comment you made, that some of the CEOs and stuff that you work with, what resonates about your message is when you're talking about who Ted is and your experience with your girls and, your experiences with your divorce and life and things. And they like that you are, you're a human. And that's a silly thing to say, because we're all human beings. But I think sometimes we hide from that, and we try to pretend we're... I know I was on a chat the other day, Access Chat, and we had Lolly Daskal on there. And she just has a really beautiful voice. She's really an amazing woman. We were talking to her, we were talking about the imposter syndrome, and how she's found about 99% of the people she's ever talked to have that imposter syndrome. And I had written a tweet saying, always have struggled with the imposter syndrome, and who do you think you are? You're a little girl from Florida, blah, blah, blah. And somebody tweeted back and said, really? You seem so confident, Deborah. I would never think that you had doubts. And that just made me smile, because that's not true at all. I have a lot of doubts. I have a lot of fears. I have a lot of things that I struggle with, but I don't let them get in the way. Ultimately, I push through them. It might be painful. I had an experience with my daughter yesterday. Many of our listeners know that I have a daughter who's 30 years old that was born with trisomy 21 or Down syndrome. And she's delightful girl in so many ways. But yesterday she's gotten in this habit of, we'll ask her to get ready to go somewhere, and she'll say, I will procrastinate. Yeah. And it's starting to get very annoying. And so what we decided to do was, we're going to warn her, we're going to ask her, we're going to engage with her. But if she keeps saying no, we're just going to leave. So, she's in a safe situation. But yesterday we were going to dinner, and my husband asked her four different times, and she kept saying, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. Well, she's 30 years old. She's safe at home. So he left without her. And let me tell you, she couldn't believe it. She would call me up at work, and she was hysterical. Oh, he left me. And so it's sometimes walking your truth is tough. Sometimes your life is little things like that can be stressful. But at the same time, it is part of being human. So when you talk about being a dad, it really speaks to me too. I often see dads really being discounted in a lot of ways in our society. I know some dads that, like you, have really had to fight to stay involved in the lives of their children. And I think we got a lot of work in society to do to make sure that dads are getting more of a equal break and really being involved in their children's lives once they're divorced and stuff. So I'm really glad that you talk about that so much. Why is that important to you to talk about?
Well, first of all, just to get back to what you said, maybe it's because of what I've done, but you have to make up your mind to do it. I mean, no matter how hard the situation is, there's a lot of ways. And look, I don't see my daughters that much, but I do everything I can to stay in front of them. I stay present. I let them know I'm always available. I go out of my way to see them in any way I can. And I also have changed my expectations. I mean, and don't think I don't have people I know who've said, you know, if I was you, I would have walked away, or I would have let it go, or I would have given up. And a lot of dads do give up, and it's not because, look, it's, there are roadblocks. Face it, there are roadblocks in life. So yes, the point I'm trying to make is I've turned away being like a dad advocate. I just think there's too many dads out there that are, woe is me, it's too hard, I put in the roadblocks, the court systems aren't fair. And, you know, I don't come from that camp. You know, I come from the camp like, hey, deal with your situation. It is what it is. And do everything you can to stay present. Change your expectations. You know, I like to say, and I said it, I don't know if you saw my video, The Dad That Doesn't Quit, but it was kind of about me, who I am. It was a great story told by a great storyteller named Jude Charles, who helped me put it together. But one of the points that most important to me is that I like to say, and this has to do with a lot more than just being a dad, is that no one can take away from me what I feel here. Okay. No matter what happens, no matter what my ex did to change things, no matter how much time I might have lost, no matter how my daughters react to me now, it's only I can take this away. And I will always have that. I will always have the memories, the caring. I will always be able to feel happy for them, even when I'm not involved. So I participate a lot vicariously from afar. My older daughter blocks me from social channels. I search her on Google. I find a lot of stuff. I know that she has her first boyfriend now, and she's really happy. And I see pictures of her smiling, and I feel amazing inside. Even though I'm not getting to share it personally, I get to be happy that she's happy. And I just think a lot of it has to do, I like to say that attitude comes first, perspective comes after that, and then that all leads to mindset. And it's all about how you set your mind. And then just to back up a second, because there was something I wanted to say about a topic we were talking about, when you mentioned about showing who you are as a person and the fact that I connect best with a lot of senior executives that way. I just want people to realize that there are a lot more people viewing what you post than you think. It's right. Not just about how many friends you have. If you make it public, and this is a choice, but everything of mine is public. You don't have to be my friend. Will follow me to see my things, or if me follow you. So I can't tell you how many people remark to me about things I've done in my life that have never liked one of my posts, have never commented. I'm not friends with them. I didn't even know they existed socially in that world. And I would tell you that the vast majority of senior executives that comment to me are people that I didn't even know were following me or watching me. I mean, right. Back when my younger daughter, who I'm visiting in D.C. next week, yay, I'm so excited, taking her to dinner and a baseball game, and she's down there doing an internship. And then I'm doing a meetup the night I get there with a whole bunch of Washington people, thanks to Stan Reeser and Fred McClemens, which I try to do everywhere I travel. But the point I'm making is that when she was 16, I took her to Costa Rica. And it was the first trip of just her and I. Her older sister wasn't coming. And we learned how to surf. And I hired this. They have this photographer. If you ever go, if you ever do these things, they have a photographer from Kelly's Surf Shop that has the longest telephoto lens you've ever seen. So you pay her. And your daughter doesn't even know she's taking the pictures. So there's, and you don't even know. So you don't feel that I'm posing, I'm doing, just from so far away, she took all these pictures and she got this amazing shot of my daughter and I both getting up at the same time. And I didn't even realize, but the instructor kept trying to get us to go together because he knew that she was trying to get this picture. But I would tell you right now that hundreds of senior executives have seen me around the country at meetings, at events, and they look at me and they go, hey man, that picture of you and your daughter surfing, you got me on that one. Like, wow, what a great experience. And like, again, you know, I used to talk about this a lot. I told brands all the time for years now, probably since 2009, that way more people are checking out, experiencing, and reading what you're posting than you think are. And you have to understand that, because most do what I call participate vicariously. They watch other things, they watch what you're doing, and they take away from that. And by the way, they're building a relationship with you that way. Because right. If you post a lot, you write things you care about, and you have conversations, they watch the conversations. So if Deborah starts commenting on my post and we go back and forth, they're reading that too, because they commented. I mean, a lot of these people also don't just comment about the photos or what I wrote. They comment about, oh my God, what Deborah said was amazing. She's right on. And hundreds of senior executives have said things to me like that. And what it did for me, and this, a lot of this happened after I left Collective Bias, because I wasn't seeing a lot of these people at all the time. And I had a little more time. I traveled with my daughter, and it was just proof positive of what I've been talking about for years, about how many people participate without you even knowing it. So don't think it's just your followers. Don't think it's just your friends. If you leave it open, you will find out. If you engage and interact and post a lot of like good fun. And by the way, the content doesn't have to be sophisticated. It doesn't right. have to be. I have a friend from high school, and she's known throughout everybody for all the crazy stuff she posts. She uses Snapchat, and she uses filters, and she takes pictures. And she's 59 years old, and people are just getting a kick out of the fact that she's just having so much fun with life and with these tools that she's got. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know don't follow her, but I show places, and they go, oh my God, you know Kathy, she's amazing. So just think about that. You stop worrying about how perfect your content is. You know, it's real. Just remember something, that real, I hate to use this word, but real trumps perfect.
Yes, I wrote that down.
And every time, because real creates trust.
Right, right. And I just want to say, maybe one, there's a lot of reasons. That's why I really like your work. But I am a child of divorce, and my mother made things absolutely impossible for my father. And so my father just gave up. He was one of the dads that gave up, and he made no effort at all to see us because it was just impossible. And I get that, but at the same time, it really hurt my feelings. And I re-engaged with my father when I was 35 years old, and we don't have a good relationship. I consider my stepfather, who raised me, to be my father, but I always, and isn't that typical? We're going to just look at it from our own perspective, but I always wished my dad had actually tried, because after I was a certain age, he could have reached out, but he just gave up. And I understand sometimes people make it, and my mother did. She made it very difficult. But anyway, so I've walked that. So that might be one reason why I just really am so glad when dads fight for the relationship with their children, because we need you to. So, and you and I are about the same age, but I just wanted to share that. But I really, really appreciate your authentic voice and the power of, you know, your wisdom that you're sharing. And how would our viewers learn more about your work, Ted? How do they find you? I know how to find you, but how do they find you?
I'm going to tell you that in a second. I'm just going to give you that there's a quote from Dr. Seuss that I always told my daughters, you know, be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind. And the greatest place to do that. And also, one last thing on the point of what you were saying, I'm so glad that you did find your dad or reconnect with him. You know, when I went through this and wrote a post after I kind of won the rights to my daughters back, one blogger in particular, Sugar Jones, and about 10 others wrote posts themselves about how they had lost their dads because of the same situation, and had always, and some of the, a lot of them thought badly of their dads because they listened to all the stories and all they heard. Right. And then it wasn't until they were in their late 30s or 40s when they found out that their dads were driven away. And by right. the way, this can happen on the other side of things too. So more or less, the moral of the story is be open-minded, realize that friendship and relationships, especially family, are really important. And as far as finding me, I'm incredibly easy to find. You can Google Ted Rubin. I'm about the first 10 pages. The only posts I am not is I'm not the 98-year-old Medal of Award winner from World War II. So that Ted, that Ted Rubin is not me. His real name is actually H. Tibor Rubin, but people call him Ted. I'm at Ted Rubin on Twitter. I'm at Ted Rubin on Instagram. I'm Ted Rubin on Facebook. I'm easy to find on LinkedIn. I'll even make it simpler for you guys. My email address is tedrubin@gmail.com, and my phone number is 516-270-5511. I actually answer my phone, accept voicemails, and return them. So if you want to reach out, reach out anytime, and I'd be happy and love to engage with you. And just, you know, remember something. Relationships are like muscle tissue. The more you engage them, the stronger and more valuable they become. And community is what gives you power. Okay, you think on here, everyone talks about networking, having a lot of connections. And a network does give you reach, and it has a lot of value. But a community gives you power. So always keep that in mind.
And I think
you're building a community here, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ted. And I really, really appreciate the time, and I appreciate you being on the program. You were very quick to say yes, and I'm grateful for that. And I really encourage any brands listening to definitely go out and find out more about how Ted can help you really tap into the R on R. Very, very important about the relationship. So, Ted, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Deborah. I appreciate you reaching out. I want to give one last shout out to Doug Forrester, because I accepted from you before I even knew he was involved. But once I heard he was involved, then I knew you were the real deal. So thank you very much, Doug.
Yeah, Doug Forrester is such a blessing to me. He really is. So thank you, Ted, for all of your work. Really, really making a difference. And your daughters are blessed to have you as a dad.
You've been listening to Human Potential at Work with Deborah Rue. To learn more about Deborah and how she can help your organization, visit RueGlobal.com. If you've enjoyed today's episode and you want to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes, go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast, Human Potential at Work. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with a new episode.